Aloha, everybody. I am Jeremy Vaney, and this is, well, it's my show, The Experience, and you're listening to it, so thank you very much. This week's guest is the notorious Tim Banal of Banal of America. Also, he is a writer for Coast to Coast AM, and we're going to get into the goings-on of ufology, a little bit of podcasting, and some conspiracy theories, from Plandemic to QAnon to the Flat Earth. So lots of fun stuff. Earlier this week, I went to a message board, one of the big sort of popular UFO and conspiracy message boards that I hadn't been to in years. And I saw the same names that I did years ago talking about the same cases from like the 1950s. And it just dawned on me how sad it is that I can't really think of another field except history, maybe, where we continuously talk about the 40s and 50s. I mean, even history talks about other times in history. So really, like, ufology is more along the lines of your grandparents, you know, like when grandpa starts telling stories about the war or something, and you're like, grandpa, I've heard that story before, and you walk out of the room. Why don't you do that with UFO cases from the 40s and 50s? Why are we still so interested that we'll glue our eyeballs to a message board, to a documentary, to a TV show? We'll keep buying the same books essentially over and over and over again by different authors who have nothing new to contribute to whether or not that is a hubcap thrown into the air or an alien spaceship. Like, if they still can't figure it out now in 2020, why are we doing this? I guess is the question. So I say that because one of the things that I've always maintained on this show is that the quality of the person doing the investigating is kind of everything, or the quality of the person who takes the time to care about their experiences as an experiencer enough to get it as right as possible. Like, what is it about these qualities that in any other subject, just about any other subject, would be lauded, would be heralded, would be the thing that you would want for yourself, to be a good witness, to be a discerning person who can rule out nonsense? Why is it that in ufology, this is kryptonite? And I just don't understand it. And I think it's in that vein, with that tone, that we approach this episode. So you've been warned. All right. If you're a non-subscriber, by the way, you know, I used to do the show where I would have a shorter version for non-subscribers and a longer version for subscribers. Well, no more. I think I'm just going to stick with non-subscribers. You get to listen to commercials, and subscribers, you do not get to listen to commercials. So unless it's me promoting my own stuff, and then everyone gets to hear it. You're welcome in advance. So I think that's good, right? That's cause for celebration. If you're a non-subscriber, you get to hear the whole show. But if you subscribe, I mean, not only do you get the full show commercial free, you get all of the episodes. So if you've just joined in the last few episodes since I've been back, and you're like, wow, this is a great show, there's nearly 200 episodes in the backlog that, as a subscriber, you get to hear all of commercial free, and as a non-subscriber, you won't. Plus all the other shows on Unknown Country that you get in their entirety as a subscriber. So a lot of content for subscribers. Definitely consider subscribing. That is my pitch, and I'm sticking to it. And after these messages for non-subscribers, Tim Banal. For subscribers, let's talk to him right now. Ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, please welcome to the program our returning champion, Dr. Sergeant-in-Arms, Admiral Tim Banal. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, Jeremy, how you doing? Good to be back on the show.
How long do you have to be in ufology before you are either given or adopt a title like Dr. Admiral something? Like, when do you start calling yourself Dr. Banal? Just out of nowhere.
If you follow, you have to follow there's a precedent. I thought you knew this, Jeremy.
No, I'm unaware. I'm a noob.
You have to follow the Phil Imbrogno precedent. So once you are allowed to adopt any and all titles that people mistakenly give you.
Huh.
So if someone were to call me Dr. Banal from thenceforth, that's not a word. From thenceforth, I could call myself Dr. Banal. I'm just saying, well, no, I just didn't correct them. That's all.
It's funny you say thenceforth. I think I used that word in my new book just on a lark. It's weird that you would say that.
Yeah,
or thence. I think I just used thence. But anyway, so I've been away from the paranormal podcasting for, turns out, like about a year. I didn't realize it had been that long. What did miss, Tim? Anything?
Well, I came back, so I'm back podcasting now. Well, you're on my show, so of course you know that already. Yeah, so...
But in terms of, I mean, it's just funny to step away from ufology in any sense and, you know, still see on Twitter people talking about, like, you know, disclosure and it's imminent and all of this. And just realizing, like, you know, freaking 15 years could have gone by and I'd still be seeing the same people talking about disclosure is imminent and it's happening. Is it happening, Tim, or has it happened, or is it just all a wash?
It's kind of a wash. It's a slow... It's been a really good few years for the UFO phenomenon, I guess you could say, or people who like, you know, I guess, because it's gotten a lot of attention. So if you like UFOs and you like it getting them getting attention, the phenomenon, it's been a few good years, but I don't necessarily know if they're going to, like, tell us what any answers, you know. They're kind of just putting forward that they have all these, you know, the questions. The questions are getting a fresh look, in a sense, which is good. I mean, I advocated for that for a long time, but, you know, the way it's happening isn't exactly how I hoped to see it happen. Because, you know, a lot of it's like, well, the government's going to, the Pentagon's going to launch a new task force to look at UFOs, and the intelligence community's going to committee in the Senate wants the DOD or somebody, I don't know, to release a report. And it's like, these are the same people who have been ostensibly covering it up all this time. So why should we trust what they say?
Well, besides doing Banal of America, you also write articles for Coast to Coast, right, for the website. And yeah. I know that to do that, you must scour the internet, I assume, for stories, paranormal stories and all that. Have you seen, in doing that, have you seen any stories in ufology, I guess specifically, and maybe the paranormal at large, that used to be huge but have fallen by the wayside?
In ufology? No, not really. I mean,
like types of stories, I guess I should say. Have you seen any types of, for instance, Bigfoot and UFO connection? Has that gone away? Did COVID get rid of that? Or is that still just as, are you seeing that pop up as much as you would have, you know, a year ago?
Yeah, but not, I mean, it's so rare that that's like rarely a thing. I can't think of anything really, that's sort of diminished in recent years. Yeah, you put me on the spot with that one. I'd have to think about it, but I don't recall. I don't recall anything that's sort of like, oh, how come there's no more, except for like spontaneous human combustion. You get one of those, like, it's been a couple of years for that, but every year is kind of predictable. You get like, every year you get like one or two of the same. Every story, like every genre, represents itself at some point during the year. Like one or two stories, you get like one or two Amelia Earhart stories. You'll get a couple of D.B. Cooper stories. You'll get like an Amber Room story. Someone thinks they found the Amber Room. Someone thinks that they decoded the Voynich manuscript. It's like you can set your watch by it. It just happens every year. There's like one or two of those stories. So, I mean, the other thing I could say probably is like there's still a lot of UFO videos, but they're not. The more you see them, the easier it is to figure out what they are, you know? So, like, now when someone shows me a UFO video, I can usually figure out within, like, 5 minutes, it was flares dropping from the sky, or, that's the reflection of the phone in the guy's window, or, you know, that's a balloon. Like, it's like, oh, people, you know, that's the big thing. UFO people get upset, and they're like, oh, and people, they always say it's a balloon. Well, very often it is a balloon. So, you know, it's don't get mad. It's just that happens. Balloons exist. I know that may be hard for UFO enthusiasts to believe, but you know, UFOs are real and so are balloons, and oftentimes they're the same thing. So that would be my one observation about that.
What about in terms of you know, the trickster theory that when there are in liminal states, there's more sort of trickstery type phenomena that might happen. So you would assume that in a pandemic, in the crazy political times we live in, with the protests going on and all of that, it's kind of putting us in a betwixt and between state. Do you see any correlation between that and a rise in any sort of paranormal reporting, or no?
That people say there's a rise in UFO reports, but I'd have to take a look at it, honestly. I'd have to look deeper. I haven't really seen. I mean, these are just general UFO reports, so it's like I don't really comb through the MUFON database or the National UFO Reporting Center database to like see what's going on with that. But I think this is a very difficult situation for the trickster element to harness in a way, because it's like how I hear a lot of people talk about having very bizarre dreams, which are kind of understandable given the stressful circumstances of the pandemic. But it's like with the pandemic, so many people are stuck inside their houses that there's not as much opportunity for them to encounter high strangeness. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, it's surprising to me that you said that UFO reports, some people are saying that those are up, because you'd think those would be the ones that would be down given that people are staying inside.
Yeah, but I guess like it's like people who go outside. But I think it's like, I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but like I started walking a lot, you know, a couple months into the pandemic, just to get out of the house a little bit, because you can't really go anywhere. So I think maybe that might be part of it, that you're seeing people walking around, you know, getting out of the trying to get out of the house, yeah. And that's when they see strange and unusual things.
You think it's weird that, you know, America, at least, and probably other countries, notoriously an indoor civilization, you know, that's been sort of the thing that sociologists have been bugging out about for the last few decades, is how isolated we've become, how much lack of community we have, how we sit indoors and sit on the computer all day. And now we have a virus that gives us a pass on that, gives us a go ahead to do that, and people are dying to get out. What do you think that is?
I just think maybe it's like psychological, where people don't like to be told what to do or something, where people would like to sit around on the couch and watch Netflix all day, but like when that's the only thing they can do, all of a sudden now they don't want to do that anymore. It's a weird sort of like juxtaposition. It's like they want to be able to say they do it by choice, or feel like they do it by choice, is probably how it is. You know, that would probably be my best guess on that.
Do you think for in terms of like just ufology, or, you know, these paranormal shindigs at large, UFO conferences and the such, Do they benefit from a pandemic or not? Or is it a neutral thing? The fact that you now have to do these conferences online, because it seems to me, I know you've put on conferences, you've been part of conferences, and you're now doing conferences online, or you're part of conferences online. Do you see a difference in the size of the audience? Do you see a difference in the way the audience interacts between online and offline? What do you see there? Do you see a future for it, or do you think that this goes away once we can all go back outside again?
I think there's definitely a future for it. I think people have become accustomed to this online visual communicating, video conferencing type thing now, because a lot of people have been forced into it. Like me, I really don't do it that much, but I enjoy it. Like when I do it, I did one this past weekend, the Strange Realities Conference. We were talking about it before we started the show, and it was interesting. I wouldn't say it was necessarily better or worse than a live conference, but it was different. It had some appeal to it, or upsides that you wouldn't really get, I think, with an in-person conference. Like I noticed, so it was like all streaming on Facebook in a private group that people pay and join and everything. And what was interesting is like, obviously it's on Facebook, so there's like a chat function, you know, and comments and everything. And the comment, it was like a lively chat. I mean, I think they broke it down like into 2 hour segments each video. So like each video had like 500 comments. So you get the chance as a speaker you get a lot of feedback. You get a lot more feedback than you do, I think, at a live conference. I've been saying on my show, like, I think maybe if the economy turns around and the vaccine comes out and it works, like, around this time next year, I think you'll see a start of, I think it'll be kind of like another roaring 20s. I think people will be so fired up to get out there and get out into the world and be among people and crowds and stuff again. I think you'll see a lot of that. But I think we'll have learned some of the lessons from this period of time, and you'll see more of these video conferences in a way. And maybe, like the guys from Strange Realities, they're talking about like maybe doing a hybrid situation next year where, you know, maybe they bring in three or four people or something like that for the on-scene, and then you intersperse video presentations from people who, you know, maybe it would be cost prohibitive, you know, to get somebody from England. So it's like, oh, you can have a video chat from them that doesn't cost anything except for whatever you're going to pay the speakers. And as opposed to what it would cost to fly them into your home base to do the event. So right. I think you'll see some more hybridization. I think that's what I'd like to see.
Hybrids rear their ugly head again. By the way, I'm only getting a vaccine if there is a Bill Gates microchip in it, I've decided. So somebody make that happen. Bill Gates, make that happen. That'd be nice. What about you? Vaccine? You only going to get it if there's a microchip?
I'll get it either way. I don't care.
Yeah, okay.
You know. I don't understand these people. Yeah, I interviewed a guest, and he's a conspiracy theorist. He was like, oh, there's going to be nanobots in the which to me is like, great. All right, nanobots. I guess that would be cool if there were nanobots, but to me it's like, I've said this to other people. It's just like, I say this about a lot of topics in this field, but it's like, look, I'm like 40, man. I'm like four. I'm going to be 42 in like a few months. It's like, I got to be on the back nine of life here. I can't worry about nanobots and the new world order and being microchipped and stuff. It's like, I just want to enjoy this second half of my life here. If I was in my 20s, maybe I'd be more concerned about that kind of thing. But to me, it's like, who cares? Just give me the vaccine. I want to be able to go out and not have to wear a mask and everything.
So in a weird way, this sort of circles around to what I wanted to ask about your show that you are rebooting. Why are you rebooting? See, it's weird that we're both sort of doing this around the same time-ish. That was not planned. just happened. Why are you rebooting? Do you have a reason? Is there something that you want to see out of guests that you haven't seen before?
In a sense, I mean, well, what happened was this is a good segue because the pandemic hit, and then I had pretty much stopped doing. I did like maybe 6 shows every over the holidays for the last 2 years, so in 2018, 2019, and then the pandemic hit, and I was like, well, I mean, I can do a show whenever I want, so I was like, let's do a show. I contacted our friend Tyler Cokejohn, and was like, let's do a show, you know, about this pandemic. This was early March when it first started, so it was like no one really kind of knew what the deal was,
right?
You know, so it's really sort of a basic thing. But like the day I, you know, that Friday morning as I was waking up and getting ready to do the show, I was like, well, this is gonna go on for a while. So I asked Tyler, I'm like, do you want to just do this like every week for a while? And, you know, to his everlasting credit, Tyler was like, sure. So then me and Tyler did 10 episodes of what eventually became just a shorthand called the Corona Cast. Updating, it was very much like the old comedy show you and I had, ironically enough, which is, I guess, paradoxically might be a better way to put it, because we were talking about this horrible pandemic. But it was a lot like our old comedy show in a sense, where it's like if you talk to the same person every week, you start to develop these sort of in-jokes, and the chemistry develops. And like I said to Tyler, as we were sort of heading toward the end of doing the shows, it was funny because like the first half of the show would be serious coverage of the pandemic, and the second half would be sort of more lighthearted updates about what it was like living through this crazy time. Which I'm going to look back on and enjoy, I think, someday, listening to again. And so things, oddly enough, around like the end of the spring, right around Memorial Day, we had done 10 shows. And it was like, this was right when, unbeknownst to me, because we didn't know this was going to happen, but this was right when all the protests started happening. Like, it was like about a week or two before then. And it just seemed like everybody was kind of coronavirused out at that point. This was like late May. It seemed like it had wound down, especially where I am in Boston. And thankfully, it's kind of stayed that way. It's starting to tick back up a little bit, but it wasn't anything like what it was in April. So we kind of just made the mutual decision, like, all right, there's nothing else really to talk about now with this thing. People that there were all kinds of unanswered questions at the start. It seemed like most of them started to get kind of answered as we went along, and it turned more into like a political thing, as I'm sure you know, where it was like, oh, open up or don't open up, and masks versus not masks, and I try not to get really into politics, so it was like, all right, well, the further we go into this, the more political it's going to get. So let's, you know, let's wind this thing down. Let's close it out at 10 episodes. So we did that, oh, I think right before Memorial Day weekend or on Memorial Day weekend. And I had gotten into the habit, thanks to this show, of broadcasting every Friday night. And people had sent me messages where they were like, oh, I'm really glad you're back, but I don't want to listen to this show about the pandemic. So it was kind of like satisfied everybody in a way, where it was like, all right, you want me to do paranormal? I'm going to do paranormal. I don't mind it. I mean, I love the paranormal. It's my life. So, you know, I don't necessarily consume it in my off hours anymore. Like, I don't watch these TV shows or anything, or even really read books or anything anymore, because I spend 9 to 5 every day swimming in the paranormal water. So it's like, I need a break. But I always have enjoyed podcasting. Obviously, I've been doing it for 15 years. So I said, all right, well, let's do a summer of shows called the Summer of Strangeness. And with the exception of you, Lauren Coleman, William Zabel, who closed out the season, and the guys who from Conspiranormal, who did the Strange Realities Conference. So those are four shows. We did 15 shows. So essentially, I had 11 people I'd never talked to before. That was kind of the goal of the season. I'm like, let's just interview people that I've never talked to before, unless it's like a special episode, which was like you and I did like on the 4th, right before the 4th of July. So that was kind of the thing. When you ask, like, was there a goal in mind or something I wanted, it was like, I just wanted some fresh conversations and sort of the opportunity to meet some new people. And it's crazy. It's not really crazy, but as dark as this sounds, like, we have the Pinball of America has a long, long history, and we relied on a lot of guests who came back often. And unfortunately, sadly, a lot of our roster, so to speak, was depleted because people died. Like Stan Friedman and Jim Morris were two, they were like the cornerstones of the program, and they passed away like back to back right after the other. And, Brad Steiger, Tracy Twyman, Terry Hansen. I can't even go down the list. I think once I sat down and like looked at the list of people who passed away, and it was like 15 or so people. It was pretty, Mac Tony's, just a whole bunch of people. So it was kind of like, well, I wanted to replenish the guests in a way. I wanted to bring in some fresh voices and talk to people that I hadn't ever heard from before, and sort of in a, to break the fourth wall a little bit, sort of challenge myself in a way, because when you interview somebody you've already interviewed before, it's easier. You already know them. You know sort of their ebbs and flows, and you know, you just know their personality and everything else. With this, it was like every week was a different. Obviously, every week was like a different conversation. But it was a different challenge. It was like, okay, well, what's this person like? Do they take a while to answer? Do they take 5 minutes to answer a question, or they answer a question in 30 seconds? And there were some that were like, they were all across the board. So it was like, it was a challenge, which I hadn't really experienced in a while. So I think our final season consisted of almost all returning guests and maybe like three or four new guests. And this was so many new people that you just don't know what you're getting into, which is fun. That's the fun of it for me, at least.
But there's nothing in terms of topics that you want to learn more about, or not. I mean, because you cover a wider variety of stuff, I think, than I do. So you probably have heard it all, as they say. Is there anything in any of those categories that you wish you could hear more of, or you wish you could hear a different angle on that is worth rebooting the show to seek out?
But I mean, I'm always trying to fill out my dance card, if you will, of topics. Like I'd like to be able to say, if this ever really truly ends, probably like I'll probably die. That's probably how the show will end. I'll be honest. Like I'll probably just keep doing this till I get hit by a truck or something. But so I'd like to be able to look back and go, all right, I did a show on every topic possible in the paranormal, which I've done pretty much. Like it's not that many left that I haven't covered. So it's hard for me to be like, oh, I need to interview someone who does, I think like this summer, Kiki Dombrowski came on and talked about tarot reading, and we never did a tarot show. So that was kind of one that I had never really done before. And we did like a true crime one. So I did try to like cover some topics that I hadn't done before. I think what I really, to me, and we used to laugh about it, you and I, like I got grief when I first started this because it was like, to me, it was always about the personalities more so than the phenomena. So to me, it was like, I spent a lot of time on Twitter. That's kind of where I found most of these guests this summer. And it was more just like people who stood out, who had, not necessarily big personalities, but who were, but who crossed my path. And who were sort of mutual friends with friends of mine and had a presence on Twitter. And clearly they were people that had something to say. That was kind of what I was looking for. You know, it was like, I'm looking for people who clearly have something to say, and I want to get them on the show to give them an outlet to talk and find out what motivates them, what gets them so interested enough to, you know, cross that line from consumer to producer.
Does it matter to you if you think they're lying or not?
No, I mean, not necessarily. I mean, I'm trying to think, like, there wasn't anybody that I interviewed this summer that I thought was lying. I don't really interview many people who sort of have stories, per se, which is the thing where the lying might come in. So,
well, when they have footage, like if they come to you and they're like, I'm the most, like, I had a guy right out of the bat who emailed me and said, I've got the most alien footage of anyone ever, you know, that shtick.
Yeah.
And I looked at it and it's garbage. And it's like, well, what do I even say to that? Now, would you have a person like that on or no? If you thought you were being hoaxed, would you have them on?
No. I wouldn't have someone I thought was hoaxing on. You know, it takes a lot to get me interested in the UFO topic nowadays. Because to me, it's just like, it was funny you said it, you're gone for a while. Has anything changed? It has changed in a way where it's like, there's like another generation of people that have come along who've only been involved with this for a few years and aren't as cynical as you and I are. So to me, it's like, I feel like maybe they're a little misguided. And so I don't really want to talk to necessarily people who are so bullish about this latest happenings in the world of UFOs. Because to me, it's like, oh, man, I get why you're excited. I was excited like back in 2003 when I got involved with all this. I was under the impression that disclosure was imminent. You know, they were holding a big conference in Washington, D.C. and having a press conference at the National Press Club. How could this not be imminent? And this was like 2003. So here we are 17 years later.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, okay. Well, you know, just because people are talking about UFOs doesn't mean that it's that we're going to find anything out.
I think you just put your thumb on the problem here, which is of no discernment of we report, you decide, which is if there is nobody in ufology in the echelons of trusted, you know, wizened elders who are willing to poo-poo anything at all, then when new people come along who are raised on all the same stories, they're enthusiastic about those same stories over and over and over again. And so it's like wash, rinse, repeat. You know, you come in enthusiastic, then you realize who's lying and who's not, and then you get jaded, and then you're cynical. And don't you think, like, if we just had, like, the elders of the cottage industry go, you know what, this, and this, and that person, don't pay any attention to them, let's move on from that. Do you think ufology would actually be able to move on, to raise a better crop of new people who aren't obsessed with the same garbage over and over and over again?
I mean, it's possible. I guess it's possible. I don't know necessarily. Ufology is so, I think if anything, that somebody trying to do that would wind up just being ousted from the tribe. You know, because it's just more exciting to talk about the possibility that they're going to tell us the truth rather than be the one who's like, yeah, it's probably not going to happen, you know. But I've said it a few times now. It's like I'd rather be the cynic that was right than the open-minded person who's a fool. So to me, it's like err on the side of caution, that kind of thing.
Well, in terms of people who are, you know, on the delusional side versus telling you the truth of what really happened to them, and you kind of sort of maybe believe it, or maybe you wholly believe it. You know, maybe you're really into it. You know, on that spectrum of people, is there any subject that you would say more attracts people that you consider to be good witnesses? And is there any subject that you would say, you know what, that's a hot dumpster fire, and you know, it's really hard to pick out the gems from the fool's gold?
I mean, a hot dumpster fire. I don't know. I mean, A lot of these fields are all kind of like that in a way, where it's like the value of the evidence is in the eye of the beholder, I guess you'd say. So it's like, to some, a UFO video is a great video, the Bigfoot video is great, EVP is fantastic, and it's like, other people might look at it and be like, no, that's not that impressive, man, you know? So it's like, they're all kind of, like, faulty. They're all kind of broken in a way, you know, all these different fields, because they've been around for a long time. They haven't been able to get to the bottom of anything, and you know, you get this mix of, like, people who have been in it for a long time and are cynical or ornery, or they're still passionate about it and hopeful, but it's like, it's just odd, man. I mean, these fields are, like, older than you and me at this point. Some of these, like the big three, like Bigfoot, UFO, and ghost. So,
well, you know, this is what I find funny about, like, I got into an argument with someone on Facebook a number of weeks ago. You know, it's the same old Illuminati, Rockefellers, they're in control of everything, blah, blah, blah. And it just dawned on me, like, if the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds and these families were ever in control of anything, they're probably not now. Like, dynasties change. Things change, right. But the stories about them don't change. So when you read it for the first time, it's so new and fresh, and you make all these connections, and you say, oh, these people must rule the world secretly behind the scenes. And it's like, no, dude, maybe they did in the late 1800s, early 1900s.
Right.
But
yeah.
Every time you say the Rockefellers own the world, Jeff Bezos makes another $1 billion. So
right, exactly,
that's just not how the world works. And it just strikes me that, like, some of these fields or some of these topics might either only attract at this point or produce delusion, whereas others have delusion built into them or have those rabbit holes you can go down. But then there's also some legitimate stuff that's worth figuring out to check out. So I guess in that vein, do you think that outside of that sort of grand, you know, global government conspiracy thing, is there anything that you've seen that strikes you as just purely delusional, a topic?
Yeah, my beloved flat Earth.
That's right. You're the very topic of the core of your heart.
Yes. I've done a lot of studying of the flat Earth, because that to me is like, I feel like you would be interested in sort of looking into it, because it sort of raises that question, because it's like, it's a fundamentally wrong theory. And that's what got me interested in it, because it was like, how does this keep, where did this come from? Like, why are people saying this now? You know, how long has this been around? So, like, I looked into it and found out, like, that it actually, like, started in the 1860s, which is insane. And every, like, generation or two, it comes back and follows this same pattern where some rapscallion will put forward the idea that the Earth is flat and put forward all this quote unquote, like, it's not even evidence. It's like unanswered questions that you can't answer because it turns out the Earth is flat, not round. And then people kind of start listening and taking interest. And then the scientific community's like, uh-oh, what's going on? And the media is kind of like, oh, hey, people are talking about this flat Earth thing. And then they rush in to debunk it. And that, like, causes, it's like a huge burst of oxygen into a fire. Then it boosts up. So all the people who weren't in the fringe group talking about flat Earth, all of a sudden, all the mainstream people, all the sheeple, are like, hey, what, wait a minute. The people think the Earth is flat. And, like, some of them gets converted over. And eventually, it just dies out, because you can't prove that the earth is flat, because it's not. So after a while, the people who are in the flat earth realm kind of just move on and into other stuff. Some stick around, but it just kind of wanes and withers away, and then it comes back for another generation. And to me, that was like, why is this fundamentally wrong theory keep coming back? And it's just, it has a lot to do with sort of like social. It started originally with the evolution and science sort of becoming institutionalized in the mid-1800s, because up until then it was like there were scientists and everything, but they weren't even called scientists. They were called like natural observers and stuff. So it was like the codification of science made religious folks uneasy, because they thought science was going to replace religion. And it also sort of made like masons and laborers who had like knowledge of stuff uneasy too, because all of a sudden everybody was going to find out about all this, all the, you know, the math and stuff that's used to build things. So into that vacuum came this guy named William Rabotham, who insisted that the earth was flat. And he was like a classic paranormalist. He was like, he was like your average UFO guy. He went town to town in the town halls and presented his evidence for why the earth was flat. And so that was kind of it. And then now, as time's gone on, it's become, I see now that with a lot of people in the flat earth field now, it's like, it's less, they don't necessarily believe that the earth is flat. They have faith that the earth is flat. It's a matter of faith. They cite the Bible and passages in the Bible, which they believe is a description of the flat earth. And even though they can't necessarily prove that the earth is flat, they have faith that it is. And that's when it gets into sort of tricky territory for me, because like, as I met a lot of the people, the ones who weren't, there were very few that were like dogmatic or combative about it, but a lot of them were just like really nice people who were like super religious. I call them like OG creationists. They're like, so they're such believers in the Bible that they, you know, they view the creationists as sellouts because the creationists have turned their back on the flat earth, which is they think is like one of the core aspects of the original teachings of the Bible. So it's a very interesting community of people. You know, like I said, I think they're generally nice people, but just kind of misguided. And I have a hard time sort of I still laugh at them because they have a tendency to do dumb stuff. But I think in every paranormal field there are people that do dumb stuff. So but the flat earthers are just sort of the combination of the silliness of the flat earther doing something dumb makes it doubly funny. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But to someone else, I guess to someone in the mainstream, a UFO buff doing something dumb is also equally funny. But still, I still think the flat earthers doing dumb stuff is like the funniest of all the people who could do something dumb. So, and like I try not to laugh at them, but sometimes they don't give you any choice but to laugh at them because they do insane things. So that's kind of where I'm at on the flat earth folks. So yeah, where it gets worrisome is then, like, as I said, like, sometimes it kind of peters out. Now I'm seeing this pandemic has had a really profound effect on people, and I've noticed that a lot of the flat earthers have just become pandemic conspiracy theorists. And that's where it's like, look, dude, I'm giving you a pass on the flat earth thing. This is a matter of your faith, in a way, you know? But to me, once you get into government conspiracy theories surrounding the pandemic, that's like when I have to get off the ride, because that's not.
Well, in a way, isn't it the same thing? Because it's faith in blank versus science telling you how things are. I think this all circles back to, we don't like being told what to do or how things are. And so you would rather believe, you know, like Plandemic, this short film that is starring a, in my opinion, probably mentally ill, although I'm not a doctor, I can't diagnose anyone, but I'm just guessing based on her behavior, mentally ill woman who is saying that, you know, all of it rides on what she says about the disease and Dr. Fauci and so on. And there are people who would rather believe this person who they've never heard of before in their lives, and these filmmakers who they've never heard of before in their lives, than their own eyes. You know what I mean? Like, that to me is a huge problem, but it's so nonspecific that when it comes up in specific form like this, it seems it's almost like confounding to us. But I think you just sort of solved it, which is it's belief versus being told what a fact is.
Yeah, I suppose. I think that's still like less a matter of faith and more just someone who like doesn't want to. I think what you were saying about people don't want to be told, there's just a distrust. People don't want to be told what they don't want to hear, essentially. And they distrust it. I don't quite understand. Yeah, I don't quite understand like where the rationalization comes in for some people who they have to see. They just see this as all like some big scam, this pandemic thing. It's like it's not a big scam, dude. People are dying.
But at least that makes more sense to me than Flat Earth. Like, it makes sense that you would want to, you're in a pandemic, you want a sense of control, you want to know who to blame, you want to, you know, so you fake it.
Right, right.
But with a flat Earth, it's like, that's so random. It's like, oh, the Earth is flat. It's like, what does that accomplish for you psychologically? Nothing? I mean, it's just so weird and random.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think what it accomplishes in a sense is like that they feel like they have some greater, you know, that they have some greater connection to God. So that fuels them. You know what I'm saying? That they are on the right side of this epic war of good versus evil, in a sense. Because the idea behind the flat Earth was like the conspiracy part of it kind of is like that somebody asked me on Facebook the other day, like, why would they cover up the shape of the planet? And like, it's a tough question really to ask, because it's like there really isn't a very good you know, there really isn't a very decent answer. And the best sort of explanation I can come up with is like the flat earthers believe that like this is part of a much larger battle between good and evil, and that the shape that lying about covering up the true shape of the planet, quote unquote, is a way of denying the greatness of God, if you will. So again, it all comes back to that like religious thing.
Do you think that these types of things need to be incorporated into how we approach, I don't know, analyzing experiencers of high strangeness, even like when we did Jeff Ritzman and I and Tyler and others did Project Core, which was a survey. And so it's, you know, it's things like what is your racial background? Did your favorite color show up in your experience? You know, you go down the list of these sort of personal questions, trying to figure out if there's any commonality to people who have these experiences. But do you think that what you're talking about here maybe even has to be figured out first before we get into the particulars of an individual, which is, why is it that every couple of years something like Flat Earth rears its head? Why is it that in a pandemic, you know, millions of people feel like they have to find an answer and feel in control and others don't? You know, do we have to deal with those sort of sociological issues first, or do you think it's okay to go along the way we're doing?
I think what you guys are doing is fine. I mean, it's hard to really, I think a lot of people do, though, filter things like through the lens of religion. So it's important to sort of understand like where they're coming from. In that regard, I mean, I don't know exactly how you'd even sort of get to the bottom of what you're saying, per se. everything is filtered through the personal life experience of the witness. So that's really all I can kind of say, I guess. That's how you take it into account, I suppose.
So people believe in my truth, right? They say my truth versus there being truth. What do you think, having dived into the worlds of different types of people who have a truth all to their own, do you think that it's true that whatever you believe, you know, just is reality? Or do you think that there is a delusion that we believe in that sort of blocks out something that we're missing?
I think there is a delusion, but it's not like, it's been like, we've been thrust into this crazy world now where everything is filtered. Everybody sort of gets all their stuff off social media and everything. And so you can tailor, people are kind of creating their own reality. And if you don't like some aspect of reality, then you can block it. If you don't like someone's dissenting opinion, you can block them, you know? And what I think is that the current state that we're in, where everything is so divisive, is sort of like the culmination of the result of all of that. Like, it wasn't so bad maybe like 10 years ago when all this was starting out, but now people are so stuck in their ways and they've developed this cocoon of their own reality that it's really hard to break. You know, I think the world would be a lot better place without social media, probably.
See America, particularly Americans, as a form of evolution, right? That we're the pinnacle, democracy and freedom and all this, as ideals on paper, is the pinnacle of something. So, but what we are is a cultureless culture. We're a pop culture. Do you think in the end that is evolution or no? I mean, do you think that that this ends well?
No, I don't think it's going to end well. I mean, I don't know. We're in a really, really, really precarious spot, like literally like right as we're speaking tonight at the end of September. Like, I can't even, beyond the pandemic, I guess the pandemic was a good prepare us for this period we're in now, but it's like, as far back as like March, it's been impossible to even plan anything out beyond 6 weeks from now. You know what I'm saying? And it's getting worse. Now it's like a double shot of uncertainty because it's like, we don't know what's going to happen with this pandemic in 6 weeks. People are really concerned it's going to like be a huge second wave now with the flu and everything else. And we don't even know what's going to happen with this election and whatever, and the fallout of the election and everything else. So, it feels like it's not going to end well because things are so divided in our country. But you hope that cooler heads can prevail, and that the vaccine can settle down the pandemic part of it. I don't know about politically. Things are just really off the rails right now, you know, and I kind of like to speak to the people tailoring. You can see that aspect of people forming their own reality, like through the QAnon stuff, where it's like the people who are into the QAnon stuff, that's like, they believe that, you know, and it's one thing if you like believe that aliens are coming here or whatever. And like, there are a lot of people that believe that, and that's fine. That's cool. That's really not a bad thing to believe per se. But like believing that there's a group that your enemies are satanic baby eaters and they need to be executed, like you've gone way over the deep end of like belief. Once people start getting hurt by your belief, that's when we need to like really take a closer look at it. That's why I say I kind of parted ways. Like, I like the flat earth people if they just stick to the flat earth, but once they're like, I refuse to wear a mask and I'm not getting a vaccine and everything, it's like, all right, now you're putting people in danger, dude, through your misguided beliefs that have nothing to do with the lovely little flat earth.
Right.
And that's the same with this QAnon stuff. It's like, all right, you're you believe some really wild stuff, and you're, you know, like they say, like, oh, they hijacked the Save the Children hashtag or whatever, and like the people who really do fight human trafficking have said that, like, they're not helping the fight against human trafficking. They're hindering the fight against human trafficking by getting it all mixed up in this foolishness when there really is a problem with human trafficking, and there are people who are trying to thwart it, and it's not like it's not happening in underground, like, sewer bases and crazy stuff like that. So
What it's
that's
funny because on the one hand, like, I think QAnon is completely insulting to anyone who's ever believed in a realistic conspiracy theory.
right.
Usually crap like that, you know, stays on a message board somewhere obscure. But on the other hand, isn't it interesting, as you're talking, I'm thinking, like, wait a minute, there is something that they have right about what they're doing. I hate to say it, which is, since they believe this nonsense, they want to do something about it. What about all the people who believe that, like, reptilians were in charge of the world and were eating babies and all of that stuff? I mean, and never did a thing about it. Never called for anyone's heads or anything. What were we, just lazy? Like, what?
I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. It's weird. I thought about that actually, because they, you see, like, there's a lady down in Georgia who's like almost certainly going to get into Congress, and she's a QAnon lady, and there's like a ton of people running for who are like going to be on the ballot in November who are QAnon people and who may end up in Congress. And it's like, I think I only know like two or three people from the UFO world who even tried to run for Congress. Obviously, none of them made it. And that kind of struck me as weird too, that like somehow this thing has transcended the fringe and made it into like a weirdly, I don't know, like I don't want to say acceptable, but it's somehow tolerated. It's like these people aren't immediately dismissed out of hand, which they should be. And they would be if they were like super passionate about UFOs
You know it's
or
bad when
like
David Icke's going,
Bigfoot.
whoa, 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 people, wait a minute. Let's put the brakes on this.
Exactly.
But on the other hand, where was David Icke calling for the ousting of the very royals and whoever, famous characters that he believed were shape-shifting reptilians? Like, why wasn't he calling the masses with their pitchforks and, you know, for that? If he was so concerned about it in the way that QAnon people are.
I don't even know. Yeah, you'd have to ask David Icke that. Well, you know, it's part of it too, I think, is I mean, I don't know. I don't know deeply enough about the QAnon field, but still, I mean, there are people who have huge followings on social media and stuff, but it's like, I don't know, it's a very strange community in a sense. I wouldn't want to even get in. It's like I was willing to go and hang out with Flat Earthers for a weekend. It's like I don't know. They don't even know if they have QAnon conventions. I mean, nobody has conventions right now anyway. But it's like I don't recall them ever having anything like that. So it's a very disparate community in a sense. I'm left wondering, and I have to look into it more. Like, aside from people with giant social media followings, it's so new that there aren't really necessarily any stars in the QAnon community, if you will, like who have written books and stuff. It's all, oddly enough, it is kind of like a faith-based group in a way, but it's like their faith is centered around this magical Q figure, and that the Q figure is telling them the truth, and the Q figure, you know, is giving them the inside track on this war of good and evil and everything. So
But isn't the difference that there's like a mobilization and a call to action? I guess that's what I'm getting at. Is like, I
right.
guess the disclosure movement kind of had a mobilization and a call to action to like find out the truth, but not in any drastic life or death way that the subject implies. And these guys are at least, I mean, I guess if they believe it, they are treating it with that sort of same severity of life and death, you know, care, I guess. I don't know. There's something there. I don't know what, but maybe there's something there for someone to tug on, who has time.
Yeah, tug on that.
Tug on that.
Well, I think part of it is too, right, is everybody, like, nobody wants to see kids get hurt, right? And it's like, that's the kind of, I've seen more people, I mean, I know people from high school and stuff who have gotten mixed up in this because they come in on this thing where they think that there's this, like, widespread, there is human trafficking. They just get mixed up, you know what I'm saying? And they think that human trafficking, and so that's what, And you read the stuff, and they get so passionate about protecting kids. And everybody wants to protect kids, don't get me wrong. But it's like the kids that they think they're protecting aren't real. Like, those aren't the kids. There aren't kids in the subways of New York. They aren't being held in a mansion somewhere else, unless it's like Jeffrey Epstein, which, weirdly enough, none of the people in that world seem to care very much about, even though we know that's real.
Well, because this is all a political, you know, this is crafted in some Nazi, you know, Stephen Miller basement to help Trump. So they're but they don't know that. The people who believe in it apparently don't know that. But what's really sad, it gets to the pedophilia thing, is I can't remember what the statistic is, but a few years ago, at least, the statistic was, I think maybe it was 1 in 3 Americans have been sexually abused as kids. So I think it's not just the heinousness of it happening to kids out there, but that, you know, so many of us have been sexual abuse victims that we're involved in that way, or it's immediately hits home in that way. And then just so if anyone, you know, in the QAnon realm is listening to this, just know that they're using that against you. And so, you know, it's up to you to not let that happen.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah, for sure.
The more you know. Yeah. Right.
But that seems to be what, because so like, yeah, when you ask like what's generating that call to action, that's it. You know what I mean? And that's a really powerful motivator, obviously. Like you can't really get, like the closest you would get, like in comparison to the worlds we populate, was sort of like this idea, like you said, the disclosure movement, where it was like, they're hiding technology that would make all of our lives easier. That was sort of the closest thing to like some kind of call to action, a reason for a call to action with UFO world. But you know, no one's like marching on Washington to demand they tell us the truth about Bigfoot. So it's like, there aren't too many, other sort of realms that this exists in, you know?
Yeah, and I guess with aliens, I mean, the point is that it's aliens. Like, the point is, like, the reptilian shapeshifters, we don't know what motivates them, but they're alien. They're not us. And this has the sick twist of it being human, of it being us, and it's something that we could do something about if we would just, you know, do something about it. Yeah, I don't know. We talk about all of this as though it, you know, it makes sense out of it. But I mean, at the end of the day, it's a nonsensical, again, worse than flat earth, really. I mean, because the guy at the center of it is Trump. And we know with our own ears and eyes and whatever else, probably smell, that he is what he is. And it is not at all. It's the opposite of what the QAnon people want him to be. And so to be able to fall for that, I don't honestly know if I believe that a whole lot of these QAnon people really believe it. I think they have to sort of force themselves to believe it because it's positive reinforcement. There's a community out there for them that tells them, you're right, you're in the know, they're the sheeple, you know, they just need to do the work. You know, they've got all these buzzwords, you feel no fear, tell them you feel no fear, you know, all this crap. And it's about how it makes you feel. And I think that is sadly where this society has gone. It's gone. I mean, even I've railed against documentaries that are emotive documentaries that it's like facts be damned. That's not what's important. What's important is how you feel, how the filmmaker makes you feel about the subject. And again, this gets back to my truth versus is there such a thing as truth? Maybe we need to like step back from all of this my feeling, my truth, me, and like really take a look at what the hell we're doing. And I guess on that note, my final question is, with this pandemic, you know, sort of allowing us to go one way or the other, either you sit with yourself and reflect on what's meaningful to you, and you know, you have to be alone with yourself at some point with this, or you go crazy and you have to like find someone out there to blame for it. And since you have not assigned blame for it out there, how has it affected you, Tim? Let us behind the curtain of Tim. Have you taken stock of your life in this time, or what have you done with this corona time?
Well, yeah, I have actually, in a sense. Yeah, I've kind of advocated for a lot of like what you're talking about, that this is a transformative experience if you let it be that way. If you just sit around on the couch and watch Netflix, if you've been doing that since March, then you've wasted this opportunity. So, you know, I think I ended up coming back to podcasting. I ended up being more creative than I have been in the last few years. And I've also, I wouldn't say like, I've gone crazy with, well, I did at times, I guess, but I've tried to like get into better shape physically, just because the pandemic scared me enough where it was like, well, if anything should happen, you know, if I get this thing, I'm not in the best shape at all. So maybe I should get into better shape, so I'm not putting myself at risk so much. So that was like kind of the other part of it, you know. Those are the kind of the two things that really changed me. But I have a different sort of situation in a way, because for a lot of people, there are obviously 200,000 families have been who lost a loved one. They have been the most severely impacted. Then there's millions of people who lost their jobs, who also have had a terrible go of it this year. So to me, it's like I didn't lose my job. I already work from home, so I didn't have to really uproot and change my life beyond at all. So I'm very fortunate in that way. So I didn't necessarily get that sort of tumultuous experience that a lot of other people did. So it didn't necessarily cause me to have any sort of introspective reflection beyond maybe like a surface level thing, where it's like, well, I can't go out, so I might as well, you know, I might as well podcast again. I can't go anywhere, so let's fire up the podcasting thing and first talk about this thing, and then after a few weeks of that, it was like, well, let's give people something different they can enjoy over the summer, because no one's able to go out and do anything over the summer. And yeah, that was kind of like my main, you know. That was sort of the main experience that I had. But I'm sure for other people I think they probably may have had a more profound impact on them, because their lives were really torn asunder by this. I've been really lucky. To me, it's amusing in a sense. People who are like, oh, I can't. Oh, I got to work from home now. This is crazy. It's like, I always work from home, man. So just you're going to love it. It's great. And a lot of people do. So, I think somebody who's working from home for the first time, they're probably experiencing some transformative moment that I probably already went through like 5-6 years ago when I started working from home. So, you know, I think it's important. It should give everybody stock of, I certainly got the sense that when this was first starting, it was really bad here in the Boston area. And there were like 250 people dying every day. It certainly gives you pause and sort of gets you to reflect on life and be more appreciative of what you have. Because who knows? You could be back then. I mean, people are a lot smarter about it now. Back then, it was like earlier this year, even people didn't know really. It was like you could go to the store, you could get it from touching the door handle or whatever. You know, you could be. It was like terrifying. Now everyone seems a little more understanding of what's going on. And up here, because everybody, because we got hit so hard, I think that's the key in a lot of parts of the country, where they are so lax about the masks and everything. Up here, we experienced it so badly that you don't see anyone really not wearing a mask. It's just accepted. You know what I'm saying? It's just and even like the most, even like the, I mean, I'm not gonna like stereotype anybody, but like even, you know, even your frat boys are wearing masks. That's like even the people you would never expect to be wearing a mask, they know that they got to wear a mask too. So because the chances are they know somebody that died. I mean, I don't think I know anyone that died from it, but plenty of people in my town did. So, and that's just like one small town. So, and when it hits home, then it becomes a reality for people. And they can kind of absorb that and hopefully adjust their behavior. You know, because if everybody wore masks, we'd probably be able to get through this a lot quicker.
General Tim Banal, everybody.
What I don't understand, Jeremy, which you should appreciate this too, is like, I don't understand, that's my last thought, which you'll appreciate, but like, you would think, and it did kind of take a little bit, but you would think in such a vainglorious country that we live in, that the ability to like have a billboard on your face to say whatever you want, or express whatever kind of weird thing you're into. Like I have masks with UFOs on them and Bigfoots on them and stuff. It's like, I'm almost surprised that people haven't, the whole country hasn't really leaned into the mask.
I know.
More.
That's shocking, actually. Yeah, Carol and I have Star Wars masks. We like those. But I'm surprised it hasn't become a fashion trendy thing to do.
Yeah, I mean, it's fashionable with the people who are willing to wear the masks, but it's like the ones who don't want to wear a mask under any circumstances, it's like, dude, you could just wear a mask that, you know, says I hate masks or whatever, or like, you know, whatever. Like,
you could wear a mask with a picture of the face of the guy from the movie Mask. That would be our chance.
Rodney Dennis. Yeah.
Attorney General Tim Banal, everyone. Tim, thank you for coming on the show and learning us about the COVID masks.
Got me now searching for a Rodney Dennis coronavirus mask. But I haven't seen one yet, but some enterprising creator out there really needs to make a Rodney Dennis mask. I would buy one in a heartbeat. Yeah. So thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah. What's the best way to stalk you online?
Twitter is where I'm most active. That's at Banal, BINNALL. I'm less active, but still around on Facebook. I find that place to be just unbearable, but you almost have to, in my line of work, I have to be on there. And also, it's still okay for some things. So you can find me on there. Just punch in Tim Banal on the search. If you want to listen to the podcast, go to banalofamerica.com, BINNALL ofamerica.com. And if you want to read my writing, you go to coasttocoastam.com and you click on articles. And it's a huge, you know, that's the archive of the articles. And I put out three articles Monday through Friday. So I'm churning out Wednesdays. I only do two. So, yeah. So what's that? 3, 6, 9, 12. So I'm putting about 14 articles out every week on everything I can, you know, anything you can imagine. So, you know, if you want to read that, head on over to coasttocoastam.com.
Thank you, Tim Banal. And that is about all the time we have here on The Experience. It is raining out. I don't know if you can hear that. A perfectly dreary day, which actually we need. We need the rain here, so thank you, the rain gods. Thank you also, Tim Banal, for coming on the show and doing this. And thank you all for listening. I do want to say just in advance of anyone in the comments section who's going to perhaps come on and say QAnon rules or you're crazy or whatever. Because I saw this happen with Whitley. Just know that I know what you know. Like, just pretend that I've already heard that you live in no fear. Ding. You did your research. Ding. You don't have to tell me what your sources are because I should do the research. Ding. Oh, what do I listen to? The mainstream media? The fake news like CNN and MSNBC? Isn't that where I get my sources? Ding. I think that's the QAnon catchphrase checklist. I think there's just the four of them. So just pretend I've heard all of that, because I have 8 million times, and say something different. Something not using civil liberties incorrectly in a sentence. And if you're wondering, like, why concentrate on this at all, I think the meta theme, and I said this, I think, in the last episode, of my time back here, however long or short this is going to be, is who are you in this moment right now? Who are you in this moment? Are you someone who really is seeking the truth, who really cares, or are you someone who is like pent up and bored? Are you someone who knows that the system is broken and knows that the authorities do lie and that scientists lie on behalf of corporations all the time and so on and so forth? Therefore, they are always lying. Therefore, the anonymous sources, the blogosphere, is equally valid to science. In other words, are you lazy? Do you decide, I don't have to have any discernment? I mean, if they're just going to lie to me anyway about other things, then I guess they could be lying to me about this. Therefore, they are lying to me about this because at heart, I just want permission to not have to wear a mask and leave my house. Right? Like, when do we, at what point are we going to pull together and be honest with ourselves about all of it? About not just the broken system, but the broken self. Not just the lies that society puts out there, but the lies we tell ourselves. Not just the sheeple who are asleeple, but our own sleep, our own dreaming mind. When does it come back to us? When do we realize that we are society? There is no mythical hidden hand out there that isn't also our own hand. I mean, it's funny because I've always considered myself progressive and I guess, you know, liberal and all of that. But when it comes to this stuff, it really sounds more like rugged individualism. Pull yourself up by the bootstraps, take responsibility for yourself, you know, that sort of thing. I don't believe that politically. But when it comes to the transcendent and the transcending issues of us, there ain't nobody there but you. And if you're afraid to look at you, how are we ever going to see our way through that which is inevitable, that which is definitely at our door in terms of climate crisis, in terms of the breaking down of systems, in terms of just life not working for us anymore as we are, not working with us as we are, not sustaining us as we are? Life isn't the problem. The environment isn't the problem. We're the problem. So how do we change to meet the demands of the environment, of life? And I mean, if we can't even approach that question, if we're too afraid, then how dare we tiptoe into the unknown? Try to shine a flashlight into the unknown and figure that out. I wonder, if we weren't strangers to ourselves, would we even have a concept of aliens?